Hello and welcome to our quarterly talking property series, The House View. Together, CBRE's Australia and New Zealand CEO Phil Rowland and Head of Research Samir Chopra investigate what's next for the Australian property sector, the potential disruptors, emerging opportunities, and what's top of mind for the industry's major players. We hope you enjoy their conversation.
Hello, I'm Phil Rowland, and it's great to be back with CBRE's Head of Research, Samir Chopra, for this third edition of The House View for 2024. We made some bold predictions in our first two episodes of The House View, and we're going to be revisiting these later in the podcast to see whether our bets have actually paid off. So be sure to stay tuned. We'll also be delving into why alternative asset classes are on the investment radar, examining the growth potential in data centres, healthcare and hotels. And we'll also give our take on the outlook for rents, vacancies, demand and investor appetite across the office, retail and logistics sectors. Kicking off with alternatives, acknowledging though that there are some differing definitions on what constitutes alternatives, but I thought we could zero in on data centres, renewable energy and healthcare as some good examples. Many of our clients want increased exposure to these types of assets, but at the Property Council's recent Property Leaders Summit, the discussion centred on the limited investment opportunities. So, Samir, am I right in saying that each of the buckets in the alternatives sector is currently only about one-tenth the size of the core commercial property asset classes?
Yeah, Phil, look, that's correct. If you think about office, industrial and retail, they collectively are about a $900 billion investment market in Australia. Alternatives collectively is worth about $100 billion currently. So, you know, if you want to hit scale in alternatives, it's a little bit more challenging. You know, there'll probably be room for only two or three participants to gain an efficient position in each of these alternative subsectors, at least over the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, okay. Well, certainly a bit challenging, but against that backdrop, there is some scope for acquisition activity to consolidate the market over the coming years, particularly if construction costs delay new supply. So let's zero in on some of the growth sectors in Australia, starting with data centres. From a global standpoint, data centre inventory is growing by about 20 to 25% year over year in 2024. And there are certainly consistent growth patterns across our different global geographies. But one number that really stood out for me, Samir, was that Sydney currently ranks fifth globally when it comes to the size of the city's data centre inventory.
Yeah, look, Phil, Sydney's a very large market from a data centre sort of perspective. It also, by the way, ranks seventh globally in terms of net absorption. And if you think about rents, which, you know, in data center land is measured in kilowatt hours, rents are increasing at about 20% type levels in the US, by about 5% in Europe, and in Sydney, they're broadly stable. And when you look at global pricing, Sydney ranks mid-pack, and in the US, pricing is about 25% cheaper. Sydney has good availability right now, which is attracting, you know, these global cloud providers. This availability should also, you know, attract clients who are looking at AI compute, but power accessibility remains a real global challenge. You know, that's affecting development timelines.
Yeah, look, there's a lot to consider around energy transition pathways, you know, as data centers, real estate electrification, and of course EV put huge demand on our grids. So this is leading a number of clients to explore real estate related ideas to get exposure to the energy thematics, whether it be owning solar and wind farms or battery sites. But just switching tracks for a second, Samir, healthcare.
Yep.
It's another sector in the spotlight. Australia's healthcare spend was around $260 billion last year, and we're estimating growth of around 3.5% per annum over the next 5 years, which is obviously going to outpace GDP forecasts, but due in part to our ageing population. So that's clearly a tailwind for the sector.
Yeah, Phil, look, ageing and population growth are the two tailwinds for the healthcare sector, which, by the way, now accounts for one in every six jobs in Australia. It used to be one in 10, mid-2000s, it's now one in six. Another positive for the sector is, you know, Australia is not oversupplied with hospital beds compared to other sort of developed countries. We have about 3.8 beds for every 1,000 people in Australia. And in most other developed markets, the average is 4.3 beds.
Yeah, well, that's clearly driving investor demand. And we've typically seen clients gain exposure to healthcare by investing in hospitals, research facilities, medical offices, medical centres, pathology labs, etc. But I know we've discussed some newer, I suppose, emerging opportunities, particularly, in healthcare precincts, Samir.
Yeah, look, Phil, I think some of this is because, we have this unique situation where there's significant investment coming in from government in redeveloping public hospitals. You can see this from the state governments. And these can seed opportunities to build out these large-scale public-private precincts. So, when I think about a precinct, it typically would include a public hospital, a university, a private hospital, a couple of specialist hospitals, such as, like an oncology center or an eye hospital. You can have medical offices that have consulting suites in them, path labs, and also, you can expand into some other things like essential worker accommodation, car parking, amenities. It's almost like a mini suburb.
It's great diversification opportunities. And of course, to be successful, you really need to build deep relationships with all the stakeholders, hospital operators, government, of course, which takes a big investment of time. All right, so just switching tracks again, Samir, I'd like to turn to hotels. This is a market which recorded strong capital markets activity in Australia in 2023. As investors got, better clarity on the fundamentals. Domestic visitor nights in 2023 were about 7% ahead of 2019 levels, which is quite remarkable given the cost of living and the high interest rate environment. International visitation has also been rebounding, with New Zealand, the US and the UK being Australia's top three source markets. So, Samir, what do you make of this backdrop?
Really interesting, Phil, just to, when you reflect back on that domestic visitor nights, up by 7%, given all the sort of economic challenges you spoke about. I think, population growth has a lot to do with this. It has a dramatic impact on hotels. It's a point that often gets missed. At least on my rough maths, for every 1 million new Australians that we have, we need 11,000 more hotel beds. That's about 20 new hotels that need to be built. And at least the way we're seeing forward supply, there's only about 5,000 hotel beds at best in the supply pipeline. And it's very skewed towards, luxury and upscale. Hotels looks and feels a lot like resi, by the way, Phil. Supply is half of demand, very much at the premium end of town.
Yeah. And of course, similar sort of demand and supply gaps as student accommodation. So some consistent themes. When I was looking at some of the other hotel statistics, another positive has been the bounce in occupancy rates, which have returned to 2019 levels. Average daily rates have also recovered pretty quickly and range 20 to 40% higher than 2019 levels, which is really helping to offset the cost of doing business as wages and outgoings rise.
Yeah, look, Phil, fundamentals were positive and they were starting to turn positive towards the back end of 22. And I think this drove a lot of the investment activity last year. We traded about almost $2.5 billion of stock, which brought hotel investment activity back to its sort of 2015 levels.
Samir, one last question before we look at our bold prediction scorecard. What advice do you have for investors as they consider positioning for the second half of the 24 calendar year and into 25?
What I would say is that returns tend to vary significantly during this period of interest rate change. We will have value investors that are hunting around for undervalued office and shopping center assets. We're seeing that right now. But over longer periods of interest rate changes, assets that can just deliver consistent, sustained rent growth should be well placed to perform. I'd expect industrial would be one of those. Healthcare, residential, and student accommodation. These are some of the sectors that'll do well. Our US team also likes industrial and multifamily, just on the strong fundamentals. They're also constructive on retail, by the way.
Yeah, well, that improving retail outlook was something that Henry Chin mentioned on our last podcast, and we're certainly seeing some more activity there. So, I think it's time now, Samir, to look at our scorecard and how we're tracking against some of our predictions from earlier in the year. We made some calls on a range of topics. We made some predictions on the outlook for rents, vacancies, office visitation, pricing, transaction volumes, and of course, the most vexed one, interest rates. So let's start off with rents and vacancies. You were expecting that rent growth would persist in 24, albeit that there might be slower leasing activity, and alongside this, that vacancy would continue to remain flattish. So, Samir, what's transpired?
Yeah, we might break this one down by sector, Phil. So, if you think about office, prime office rents are tracking to about 1-3% quarter on quarter growth into the second quarter. We've just had our meetings and that's what's happening. Incentives are flat to slightly lower in CBDs. And then the market's just bifurcating, Phil. CBD offices outperforming because what we're seeing is occupiers are moving inwards. It's a very different story out in suburbia.
Yeah, absolutely. And even within CBDs, there's a large variance with the core outperforming, you know, more fringe locations. And certainly our teams, our leasing teams, are really encouraging clients to come early to the market as vacancy tightens up in that in the premium product. And to illustrate this point, in the US, prime office buildings have had a net absorption of around close to 50 million square feet since 2020, compared to non-prime, and with a negative net absorption of 170 million square feet.
Just speaking about that premium office point, Phil, you know, we've been very constructive on law firms as an occupier group for the past 2 years. That's an industry which has, you know, continued to see growth. They're hiring very actively as well. And they're very active in the pre-leasing market. So, yeah, look, I continue to like law firms as an occupier class. I'm also sticking, Phil, with my controversial call that Brisbane CBD prime office will have the strongest rent growth this year out of any sector geography combination. We're looking for a sort of mid-teens growth there. So that basically means, you know, Brisbane CBD office rent growth should outperform industrial, retail, residential, you know, any sector asset sort of combination this year. In logistics, you know, we came into this year cautious. A number of the 3PLs, you know, the large warehousing companies, logistics companies, they'd been really active in 22 in particular. And, you know, the outlook for retail sales is pretty uncertain right now, just given these economic pressures. Rents have also gone up very significantly, right? Like by 70% in some markets. But it appears that right now, you know, as we do mark-to-market in the second quarter, face rents are holding firm quarter on quarter, but there's a creep up in incentives.
Well, you know, certainly from a leasing standpoint, we are seeing some signs of softening in demand. Although in the second quarter, we did see a bit of an uptick in inquiry in the food sector. And of course, globally, we're seeing a lot more emphasis from occupiers renewing leases rather than relocating in the current environment.
Yeah, look, and then the final one is just shopping centres. And we're seeing flat rent growth. There's been some outperformance in Western Australia, but ex-Western Australia, you know, shopping centre rent growth's flat. In resi markets, by the way, rents are showing signs of stabilising at the current high level. Vacancies also sort of paused. Some of this is just seasonality, Phil. You know, you normally get a very strong first quarter when a number of students come to the market. There's also a whole bunch of people that graduate from university and have their first jobs. And all of that transpires in the first quarter. So second quarter, things are kind of softer, slower. And Perth continues to outperform. You know, vacancy is super tight in Perth.
All right, so broadly speaking, we're comfortable with the prediction on positive rent growth and relatively stable vacancy across sectors, you know, despite the slow GDP growth. Our other bold prediction had been that return to office would continue to gain some momentum. And so, and I recall, Samir, you expected we could return to 2019 levels on peak days. So what's the data telling us on how we're tracking?
We built our own office visitation tracker, Phil. So, you know, that's sitting at about 76% of 2019 levels. And on peak days, office visitation in Perth, Brisbane and Sydney, you know, is near or above 90%. Melbourne also is showing better signs of recovery in 24. It's kind of following Sydney's trajectory from last year. I just caution, though, the data is very constructive on CBDs, but it fades as you head out towards suburban markets. There are some real nuances also around occupier types.
Yeah, and that really should allow occupiers to have a little bit more confidence in making, you know, their workplace decisions. I also heard a really interesting anecdote from New York that subway usage during workdays for prime locations is nearly 90% of pre-pandemic levels. So, you know, perhaps some more positivity to come in the US also. So, next prediction. I recall you saying, Samir, I am bullish pricing and bearish volumes. So that does seem to have played out in an office in resi where transaction volumes have been softer, but there do seem to be some green shoots coming through for shopping centres and logistics.
Yeah, look, Phil, on overall investment volumes, I still believe that this year, 24, is going to end up being sort of flattish on last year. Pricing's a very different story. Maybe let's start off with some positives. Residential values are tracking up to sort of mid to high single digit growth in 2024. That was one of our big calls, by the way. Shopping center and logistics pricing also looks like it's found a floor. Prime shopping centers, you know, trading near low 6% sort of cap rates, and logistics with a sort of high fives cap rate.
And Samir, I presume, you know, based on some of the recent transaction activity, the cap rates are widening a little more in office?
Yeah, look, Phil, we had expected about 25 bips widening in the first half and then flat for the rest of the year. But it looks like, you know, there could be up to 75 bips of widening. So a trough to peak cap rate expansion for like a grade A asset in CBD location could be closer to 200 bips overall, whereas my previous expectations had been, you know, 125 to 150 bips.
Yeah, well, it was interesting to hear Henry's view that cap rates in Australia are trending towards parity with what we've seen in the US and Europe. So perhaps this helps get buyers and sellers a little closer in the bid-ask gap.
Yeah, look, but we're still not expecting to see a large amount of distressed selling in Australia. Gearing levels appear to be pretty conservative. Incentive levels remain the other key thing that the market's very focused on right now, Phil. You know, people just want to get a read-through on, you know, what's the true effective yield on these assets.
Yeah. Right, let's talk interest rates, Samir, which is probably where we've had our most divergent view, you and I. So you were expecting two rate cuts in Australia during 24. Now, inflation is still tracking at the mid-high 3% level, and of course, the RBA has not given any indication that they see policy being eased. It does appear that a rate cut is unlikely in 2024, but what do you think?
Look, I acknowledge I've got a contrarian view. I still expect interest rates will be cut in 24. Maybe let me lay out the case. There are kind of three things on my mind, and you know, we'll just see how they pan out in the second half. The first one is inflation has come down quite a lot. You know, it was very high in 22. It's come down from its peak levels, and it's been stubborn more recently. Second one is, you know, the underlying economy itself is actually, it's got a real cold draft to it, particularly when you look at retail sales or GDP per capita. And of course, the immigration tailwind that we've had is going to be much slower from here. And the third thing at the back of my mind is it takes 12 months, you know, for the impact of any interest rate hikes or cuts to start to come through. So any course correction that needs to happen because of this slowing in retail sales or GDP, you know, it needs to start early. I also, Phil, don't expect the first one or two interest rate cuts will have a material impact on things like retail sales. Most mortgage repayments in Australia are, you know, set at a fixed amount per month, and any sort of rate relief people get will just be used to pay down their mortgages at a faster rate, at least initially. So it probably won't be until we're well into the cutting cycle that it actually starts to provide some sort of impetus in the economy.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but I'm going to stick with my view that we won't see rate cuts until next year. I just really think that, as I've said, that this inflation just remains very, very stubborn. So you'd better get down to the store there and get your bottle of Colerain lined up, mate, because I'm going to be looking for it.
I've Googled the price, Phil.
All right, look, let's discuss the two other elephants in the room, construction costs and land taxes. You know, both of these are increasing and likely to continue to make for very challenging investment cases. So what's your take, Samir?
Yeah, look, construction costs are really problematic. They're 35 to 40% higher than they were in 2019. We had expected that they would stabilise, maybe even see some downward pressure late last year. You know, as you'll recall, costs went up a lot because of higher energy costs, higher shipping costs. But after stabilizing in the third quarter, they're now starting to reinflate again at a faster clip every quarter.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, this obviously implies that the cost of bringing each square meter of real estate product to the market is nearly 40% more expensive today. So, you know, that's certainly going to be a drag. You know, it should drag up asset values and rents over time.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and an unintended consequence of this is that the only areas where you build new stock or redevelop an asset is in premium markets. We're seeing this playing out in residential built to sell, in premium office, in luxury hotels, in premium retail. The only stuff getting built is premium.
Yeah, Yeah, well, it continues with your ongoing broader theme about premiumisation. Look, and it's not just construction costs, but the most recent state government budgets also saw some pretty significant escalation in stamp duties and land taxes. And, of course, a number of these were targeted at foreign owners, which really is have a profound implications for foreign capital.
Yeah, look, the taxes are part of an outcome of rising infrastructure spend across the Australian states. Collectively, governments' net debt has doubled to about $800 billion over the past 4 years. That's both state government and federal government. And, you know, infrastructure spend is still growing over the next few years. And so I expect we're in for an extended period of these real estate tax hikes.
Yeah, it's concerning. It really is a double-edged sword. You know, taxation is creating a real impediment to the supply that we so dearly need. But in turn, of course, the infrastructure spend on trains and roads, airports and hospitals, it really is a comparative advantage for Australia and of course, a backbone for really good quality development across all asset classes. All right, so I think that wraps us up. Thank you, Sameer, and of course, thank you to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed this latest edition of The House View. You can send us your feedback and any questions you might have via talkingproperty@cbre.com. We'll be back again in October, so make sure to subscribe to Talking Property so that you don't miss the next House View and CBRE's fortnightly Talking Property episodes. Until next time.